So, oh, we'll just let the ice cream van get out of the way.
Wait, is that you? Yours?
Yeah, it's outside our house. Does anyone want anything?
I'll have a strawberry mimi.
All right, there we go.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. Get involved with the debate by tweeting at Blue Moon Podcast and check out exclusive interviews on bluemoonpodcast.com. It's your club and this is your show.
Sometimes you just get the feeling it isn't your day. Watford fans had that feeling on Tuesday, while City fans could sense something was up at Wembley on Saturday. Talk about a tale of two cities. They had no problem converting chances at Vicarage Road in a dead rubber, but in the vital FA Cup semi-final, they could have played all day without finding the net. Welcome to this week's Blue Moon Podcast, as we decide to turn our attention towards the maestro David Silva. His time at City is quickly coming to an end, so we're taking this week of dead rubbers as an opportunity to celebrate his last decade at the Etihad. We're also going to finish our series of reviews on the 2010s as we look back at last year's extraordinary campaign, and we'll look ahead to the final match of the season as City take on Norwich. I'm David Mooney, and with me this week is Mr. Stat City himself, Adam Carter.
Hello.
And Goal.com's Jonathan Smith.
How are we doing?
So, as I mentioned there, FA Cup disappointment, Adam. Why couldn't City turn up for the one day where the pressure's on the one big occasion in lockdown? Why was City not there?
I think it was a typical case, a classic case of Pep Guardiola overthinking it. I tweeted before the game, we'd had too long to think of every interview, every restart documentary, every comment, fans and club alike, were all geared to these two cup runs, the FA Cup and the Champions League. And I just fear it was a case of Pep having too long to think about it, the players having too long to think about it. They should be professional enough to put in a performance, but it was just flat. And we'd not looked like a team that was going to put a flat performance in the lead-up. It was the perfect build-up, so we can't complain about that. I think the Chelsea game was a game too far when we lost at the Bridge. But other than that, you know, the Southampton game, where we looked a bit toothless up front, but that can happen. But this game, it wasn't even just a case of being toothless up front. I think you tweeted saying we could be there until midnight and we still wouldn't have scored. I think it's just a case of that game being too, the focus of almost being too much on it from too far, too long into the run-up.
Yeah, John, as soon as Arsenal scored, everybody went, well, this is trouble now.
Yeah, City don't really come back from a goal down at the moment. And they seem to have this habit of, as soon as they go behind, they do create chances, they just don't take any. And I thought it was, just as much as City were bad, I thought it was a success for Mikel Arteta and shows why he was so highly thought of by people at City and why Arsenal took him. Because I thought he got his tactics right. He stopped City from playing, coupled with the fact that they weren't at it. They just, first half, they were just nowhere near what is their best. They were slow. The movement was poor. There was a lack of initiative in trying to come up with something different. It was only in the second half where they sort of started shifting players around, De Bruyne coming out wide, that kind of stuff. But like you say, by the time it was 1-0, you had a daunting feeling that they're not going to come back into this, because it's just not been happening this season.
Why, John, does City cross the ball so much when things are not going well? Why is it that they just resort to getting it in the box as soon as they can?
Well, I think it comes down to the opposition on Saturday, because they played very narrow, squeezed the space. You know, lined players up in the box, pressurised Gundogan and De Bruyne when he was in the middle. So really, you've got no options. You've got the ball and you playing it out wide, and sort of Mendy had a lot of space on one side. But he's trying to thread a cotton through the eye of a needle, trying to get a ball to pick out Jesus or whoever in the box. And it was only in the second half when, you know, there was one, the pullback for Sterling. That kind of thing, it has to be perfect. And they were just a long way from being perfect.
I was going to say, Adam, it always feels like if we stand here and we say, well, City, I don't really remember City creating that much where the goalkeeper had to work. And then you think back to the chances where, like, the ball that hit Sterling in the face where, you know, a couple of millimetres and it hits him in the face and he's on target. You've got the one where Sterling robs the defender and doesn't get a shot away. There's the pullback John's mentioning. There were some good chances in there.
Yeah, and you've got Laporte's one that just missed the post as well. I think it wasn't a lack of chances, that it was lack of taking them. Obviously, I can't think of Arsenal having too many, but they had two chances and took them. So, and apart from an Ederson save earlier. So there's the difference there. We weren't clinical enough. We weren't alive enough. You talk about Sterling getting hit in the face with it. It's just that extra alertness that we just didn't have in that game. Typical City that were looking great before it. It comes to the crunch game and we just choked on the day. But we certainly had chances to get back into the game, but we just didn't take them. And we'd been doing that in all the other games. We were taking our chances, and obviously the one that matters, typical City, we're not alert enough to take them.
Well, like John says, though, that like if there's no space, what else can City do other than just get the ball in the box? Is there anything they can do?
Well, it was so frustrating just lumping them in to just see Luiz lapping it up. We made him look like an absolute prime company on the weekend after making him look like a clown earlier on in the season in the restart. You've seen so much of Pep's success in getting a winger down to the byline and pulling it back for Sterling to tap in from the six-yard box. We've seen it time and time again. And like Johnny alluded to there, once when you've not got that space, although you're having to thread passes through the eye of a needle just to get in those positions, it's tough. And we looked clueless. And it's very rare that we look clueless. This season it's happened a lot, like Johnny says. Once we've got a goal down, we look like we don't know, we've not got any solutions to that. But how much can we put on the fact that Arteta knows how Pep's going to set up? He knows how he approaches these type of games. And I don't want to buy into that theory too much, but you've got to mention the Arteta factor in that he knows Pep intimately and he knows what type of tactics to apply to nullify him.
Well, John, I was going to come to this because Mike Cook on Twitter asks, why does Guardiola use inverted wingers against a low block? And basically getting at the fact that that if you want to get the ball to the byline, get your wingers on their natural side and get a low ball in across the face of goal.
Yeah, but you've also got to have people in the box to try and finish these chances off. And that's where Sterling has been so successful over the past few seasons. You know, he's a master at coming in from wide and getting on the end of things. Similarly, Mahrez can go either way, really. He's equally well-footed. And him playing on the right against Arsenal, he actually was the only person to have a shot on target during the game when he cut inside and hit a low shot to the near post that was well saved by Martinez. So, yeah, the thing is, My footballing knowledge from where I've been schooled is in a game like that, you stick on a 6.5-foot striker and hit balls to him. And that's Pep is never going to do that. His answer is you just do it better. You just, if it's not working, it's because you're not doing it right. And, you know, it's worked throughout his career. He's worked brilliantly for two seasons at City. It worked unbelievably well at Barcelona, and that's where he wants this team to be. So if they're going to get anywhere, you know, it's no good signing Peter Crouch and saying, right, we can't find another way through, stick him up front. His answer is you just do it better.
Yeah, I mean, Suleiman on Twitter asks, when was the last time that Pep used the wingers to widen the pitch rather than the fullbacks? I don't think I've seen him do it this season. And I suppose that kind of taps into the same thing, Adam, because at the minute, you've got Walker and you've got Mendy as the ones who are offering the real width, and Mahrez and Sterling are really tucked in.
Yeah, and his Barcelona days, Pep played without a striker, so he really had the answers to it. But for us, he doesn't seem to. Since Sane went off the boil, injured, and then subsequently left the club, we've not had that real width, attacking width. Sterling likes to cut inside. Mahrez only ever cuts inside, and he's doing a really good job of it this year. But when they're not able to find those gaps inside, we've got nothing on the outside. on the outside. I don't know why we're not using our attacking players on that overlap that we use the wing, the right back and left back for more. And if they're not doing it, I don't know why we then just revert to whipping it in. If you keep doing the same thing over and over again, you're going to get the same results. So I don't know why he keeps, because it's not as if we're a revelation at whipping balls in and scoring headers. So I don't know why that's the tactic that we revert to each time. It's quite frustrating, really.
What I will say in Guardiola's defence in that kind of point is that these are players at City that are good enough to be able to find that space between the centre-backs, you know, and drop a ball right in that kind of 6 inches of space where you need to be able to get, where you need somebody to get on the end of it. So it's not necessarily trying the same things over and over again and getting and expecting different results. It's trying the perfect thing and trying to perfect it, I suppose. John, I want to ask about Guardiola and the bench as well, because there's been a growing feeling around social media that Guardiola doesn't really use the bench to the best of his abilities.
No, there's not been too many occasions when he's pulled out a substitution that's completely changed the game. There aren't a huge amount of different options. Like you say, there's no, you know, Sané's gone now. He was a slightly different forward to what they haven't got. Bernardo's kind of a different option in some ways, in that he's, you know, he can dribble, he can pick a pass, but he's just not at it at the moment. Things aren't happening for him for whatever reason.
They're all diminutive, tricky players.
Yeah. I do think in games like this is perhaps where Aguero is missed, in that, you know, love Jesus, love what he works so hard, he does so much. He's got everything about his game, but these are the games where you just need an out-and-out striker. And, you know, it's no disrespect to say he's not as good as Aguero, because Aguero has been the best, one of the best in the world for a decade, and he's still one of the best. But these are the games where when a half chance drops, he scores, he takes it. And, you know, Jesus didn't even have a half chance on Saturday, and that's where I think Aguero's missed, and that's where I think they really need him back for the Champions League, because it's going to be similar tight games, and sometimes Jesus' confidence drops when he's not scoring goals, and Aguero will just snap. Well, Aguero can miss, of course, but he's more likely to snap them up.
Yeah, just on that quickly, is there any news about Aguero in the Champions League and his fitness? Is he likely to be back, likely to make it?
Well, I think the last we heard was, well, Pep said that he's definitely out of the Real Madrid game. So hopefully City get through that, and then he's in with a chance of playing in the quarterfinals.
Yeah. Let's talk about Watford and a nicer game for City fans to watch, Adam, because I don't know about you, but I got the feeling pretty early on in that game that Kevin De Bruyne wants this assist record.
Yeah, so that was like the complete opposite of the Arsenal game. I think we were playing with a bit of freedom. There was nothing on the game. De Bruyne was spraying passes as we used to. I think he was trying to force it too much in the Arsenal game. And once is it a bit worrying that once he's off his game, the whole team's off his game? Yeah, I used to have that effect with the team. But going back to the Watford game, we were just a team bizarrely brimming with confidence. We were in the ascendancy from the half hour mark onwards, and never really looked like succumbing to that once we'd got our noses in front. And I think it goes again with that pressure thing. No one was talking about the Watford game. Everything was on the Arsenal game. So we've just turned up, done the job, and we were playing with freedom, and that showed, really.
Yeah, he's on 19 assists now, John. One more will level the record. Two more will break it. Do you think he'll do it?
Yeah, I think he will. I think he'll be desperate to play against Norwich. And I don't know if I'm looking for it or we are looking for it, but sometimes you get the impression that he's trying to pick a pass rather than shoot sometimes. So there was one certainly against Watford where he thought, why did he just smash that in? he's tried to roll it across to Sterling, but, you know, it would be fantastic. A real sort of landmark moment to get 20 assists is, you know, quite a feat, only been done once before, and to then hold the record for the most in the season. I mean, I'm not always a a big fan of assists as a statistic because I think it doesn't always tell a true tale.
Yeah, you can get one, can't you, by passing it in the midfield, the other player running round, beating three players, going round the goalkeeper and popping it in, but you get the assist. Yeah,
exactly. Or you can hit a fantastic 80-yard ball and someone's, you know, just laid it to the side and they get the assist and stuff like that. But I think over a season, the players who are at the top of the assist charts are the ones are there because they are consistently providing opportunities. So I think at the very top end, it does mean something. And, you know, we all know that Kevin has been the best. He was the best in Germany for the time he was there. And he's been the best in the Premier League since he's been with City.
Adam, there was a moment where he almost got the ball clean through on goal, and I did wonder if he would stop and wait for support to pass it to, and instead of taking on the shot. And then there was cries for him to take the penalty. Do you reckon he could have passed that in one of those bizarre penalties where you just lay it off to the side?
Yeah, I think he definitely would have if he was taking it. We would have had the Pires Henry moment again, no doubt. He's gunning for this. The assist stats don't, as a statistician, they don't mean anything to me either. With the reasons you've alluded to, but he's desperate for it. He's even called out the Premier League on Twitter when they've took ones off him with the dubious goals panel and thing. So he knows what's at stake. He wants. I think he's had a private word with Henri about it through the Belgian connections and the national team. So he's gunning for it. He is desperate to get that record, and he will chase that until the 90th minute at the weekend, definitely.
Let's talk Raheem Sterling as well, because it was a great finish for the opening goal. He won the penalty, which he then missed, but did go on to score, Adam. So we can forgive him that, can't we?
Yeah, he just likes to add that missed penalty statistic as well, because we see him, unless it's De Bruyne taking it, we don't like scoring penalties. He's another one who's chasing records now, and that's what this type of game will be about now. There's nothing on it apart from personal accolades. He wants to be scoring 20 goals as a winger, as he referred to, and he'll be looking for that, and if it's De Bruyne that can assist that, it'll be the perfect combination.
Well, I was thinking about this, John, because like Sterling's record is actually ridiculous for a player that isn't a central player. He's now got as many Premier League goals as Fernando Torres and Eden Hazard, and he's scored more Premier League goals than Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, yeah. And what was it, three, four seasons ago, everyone was saying that he couldn't finish.
Exactly.
And that was his problem. He's just improved his game so much in that. It was just a brilliant strike against Watford. It was unstoppable. Foster didn't even bother diving for it. It was just passed him, beaten for power. It's a new type of goal that for Sterling. He's now got the hang of finishing one-on-ones. He's got this great move where he cuts inside and rolls it into the far corner. He can dummy and beat another man and get into the box and finish that way. We were saying before, he's got this knack of when they're breaking down the right hand side, he arcs his run so that he's coming into the 6 yard box to get on the end of it. Knows exactly what's happening because of the Guardiola system. It's just perfect for City and just improving all round. You know, he's a leader for England, confident off the pitch. Just becoming one, you know, an absolutely fantastic player.
Well, you say chasing records as well. This is probably a slightly too far for him because if Jamie Vardy, Danny Ings, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Mohamed Salah don't score at this weekend, then only 5 goals will get in the golden boot. So you never know.
Well, he'd have to think that he might have to take a penalty. So that's probably done for then, isn't it?
Right, well, it's dawned on every City fan during lockdown that we've all seen David Silva playing live for City, probably for the very last time. After 10 years at the Etihad, 4 Premier League titles, 5 League Cups, 2 FA Cups and 3 Community Shields, and possibly one more trophy to come in the Champions League this season, fingers crossed, Silva has been there, done it and bought the T-shirt for the club. I've been speaking to the Spanish journalist Paul Bayus about the midfielder's career.
I think that City was the place where he felt that they really want him. I mean, for me, that was the turning point that made him decide, okay, I'm going to Manchester because I feel that they want me to be part of a new revolution, or if you can call it that way. And I think that if you look now at the last 10 years, you could say that he has succeeded on that aim. So I think that he made like the right choice.
It's certainly, when you think of that City team that really revolutionised what City would become under Mancini, mm-hmm. it was him and Yaya Toure that were the two key signings for that, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it's kind of difficult when all the people from Spain, when we saw that David Silva was going to Man City, most of the people probably were saying, well, he's making a mistake here. Because he could go to Real Madrid, he could go to the Spanish League, like a more comfortable league to play in his style, because he was really used to that. And he's going to Man City in a really physical football, really box to box. He's not that type of guy. But if you have to analyze David Silva, I think that you just cannot stop with his quality. You also have to see his ability just to understand how he had to change his game and just do it. And just don't complain and be one of the best in a country that probably never expected to have this great version of David Silva.
I was going to say, in terms of his stature, certainly when he arrived, you know, he looked very diminutive. He's not the tallest. Yeah, he looked like he'd get knocked around a bit certainly in the Premier League. And it never really happened.
Yeah, it never really happened. I think that it helped him a lot. His first loan as a footballer, that was at the Basque Country in the north of Spain. It was at Eibar. That is a club with a lot of similarities with the British football, if you can call it that way, because there's a lot of physical contact, like you are getting used to play in stadiums that are not the Santiago Bernabeu, the Camp Nou. You know all the parts of football that are not in the spotlight. And I think that he understood there at a very young age, I think he was 17 when he was there, that football also was more than making a pass, than scoring a goal. It was like understanding that you have to get to some fitness levels, to some physical levels, and you have to adapt to it, because if you don't do that, football is going to tear you apart. So I think that it has been a thing that has been a constant in his career. Just don't complain. And work more for reaching your goal.
I think that's the key as well, that don't complain thing, because he's you barely hear anything from him. He's never quoted in the press. He never does sort of, you know, big interviews, that sort of thing. What's his character like?
Yeah, that's the thing about his character as well, the thing that he doesn't really speak to the press. I mean, he's really shy with the people that he's not really confident with. When he doesn't know anyone on the first steps, he's not like the most open guy. And that's why he doesn't really like to speak to the radios, to speak to the papers, because he probably feels like out of place. But when you're getting confidence with him, I get the sense that he's a guy that enjoys being surrounded of people that he can really rely on. And I think that in the dressing room, you can also feel that he's not a guy that is going to make a speech on the UN that is going to convince like everyone. But he's a guy that when he talks, everyone is just listening. And that defines a lot of how his character is. He's like a silent leader, I would say.
I think it kind of speaks to the reason why most of the City squad voted him as the captain when Guardiola was looking for someone to replace Kompany as well, in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, he's an important part in the dressing room, and he has also been like an important part for Pep, because when Pep arrived here, of course he needed like support from the old school here at City, and I think that David Silva was probably one of the biggest parts of that kind of players, and it was like a big support for Pep and for the squad as well. That was really respected around, so yeah, that was probably the thing that made him like honored with the captaincy.
Now, you mentioned obviously Guardiola's arrival there. What's Pep done to him? Because his game seems to have got even better under Guardiola.
Well, the thing is that I think that the quality of David Silva has always been there. If he's one of the greatest players of the history of the Premier League, it's not just because of Pep, in my opinion, it is because on the previous year he was outstanding, as well as you mentioned with Mancini and with Manuel Pellegrini as well. But the thing with Pep, I think that if you think about which players were the most important for Pep when he arrived at City in terms of trying to establish his way of playing football, I think that David Silva was top two, top three probably. Because in the way of, I mean, in all the tactical terms, how to understand the way that Pep wanted to play football, David was basically top of the class. I mean, we all see that for the way that Pep want to play, the number eight role, the number 10 role, like the central of the midfield is probably the most important area because it modifies all the movements around them. And I think that David Silva just clicked when he was just there. He know how to play on the pockets. We hear Pep like telling to the press how good is David Silva playing in the pockets. So you can see his admiration from David Silva from the first minute that he was on the bench. And I think that has been probably one of the biggest impact that he's had for Pep during his time at City.
In terms of Silva and his playing style, because I'm interested to get your view on kind of how he became certainly, you know, one of the best Premier League players, if not the best Premier League player of this era. Yeah. Purely because, like, if you want qualities in his position, you'd normally want somebody who's two-footed, who's got a bit of pace, and can shoot from range. And he can't really do any of that, but yet he can do all of that. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to explain because he's a player that is out of all the stats that you can count. I mean, he's never going to be the top goal scorer of the league. He's never going to be the best tackler in the league. He's not going to be the one that wins more duels, but he's just the best when he plays. I mean, he just controls just the flair of the game, the flair of the ball, and uses that just to dominate the other teams. He doesn't need the stats. He doesn't need like to score goals to show off. He's just like doing the job, and he's doing it brilliantly. And I think that this, I don't know if you can call it like some ego, but this not having like a huge ego, I think that has played a huge part in the benefit of the team, of course.
How is he viewed, certainly now at the latter stages of his career, how is he viewed over in Spain?
So to be honest, I think that he doesn't have like the recognition that he deserves. Maybe because he has spent the best years of his footballing career in England, and the fact of not being in Spain make it like a bit like far away. But yeah, I mean, if the press is not giving him like the recognition that he deserves, I think that you just have to listen to all his football players, to all his mates, to all the footballers that he has shared the dressing room with. When you hear when Xavi, when Iniesta are speaking about that David Silva, you just realize that he's one of the top generational talents of Spain, and he's one of the reasons why Spain has been successful in the last decade. But yeah, I think that probably this thing of not liking too much speaking with the press and not being on the spotlight hasn't been in favor of him in terms of getting the recognition that people in Manchester give him. But yeah, I think that in time, when time goes by, he's going to be remembered as he deserves to be.
And just finally, Paul, I just want to ask you now, how lucky are City fans to have seen him for the last 10 years?
Amazingly lucky. I mean, I've been here for the last 4 years, and I feel that I'm seeing a player, one of the best players that I've seen in my life. So I think that probably now we are not really aware of that because we are seeing him because it's so present to us, seeing David Silva week in, week out. But when the toughest part about David Silva is going to be how are we going to miss him when he doesn't play. And that's when we are going to realize how lucky all the City fans and all the football fans that we have enjoyed him have been during that last 10 years.
Please support the show by becoming a backer. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Paul Byers talking to me about David Silva. We're coming to the end of David Silva's career at City now. The clock is ticking down. Adam, how are you feeling about you're not going to be there for the final game?
Yeah, that's a bitter blow, really. And I think the last time I saw him was West Ham at home. Didn't really think that was going to be the last time. So you don't really take it in, do you? It's sod's law that there's a lot of fans across the country that are going through the same thing with their players. But for someone who's made such a mark on us for such a long time, 10 seasons, 433 games so far, and we're not going to be there to wave him off, I fear that the club are going to put on a returning testimonial, a bit like companies, and I don't think that's going to have the same emotional impact that the other testimonials can have when they're a bit more relevant. So I'm gutted to not be there to see his last game, and I think I speak for every City fan when I say that.
John, have you had much contact with him in mix zones and stuff like that? He's a very, very quiet lad. Has he ever stopped or anything like that?
Quick answer to that, no. I've spoken to him briefly. He promotes the Canary Islands for tourism. That's the only time we ever get to speak to him. I probably gave up about 9 years ago, even asking.
He's very shy, isn't he? That's the thing.
I just don't think he wants to speak to us, basically. I think he's got pretty good English. He's just not interested, but If there's one person who gets a free pass, I think it's David Silva.
Yeah, the one for me, I don't know if you heard this, Adam, recently, but it was the story that Rob Green was telling on Five Live about playing for QPR, and City were 6-0 up, and David Silva was running the show, and in his head he's going, "I'm just not going to concede 10." And then he shouted at one point to David Silva, "Just stop. You've won the game. Stop it." And Silva turned around to him and said, "My friend, I can't do that."
What a player. What a player. And, you know, that's all he knows how to play is beautiful football. He knows those intricate assists that we've seen him do time and time again, year after year. You know, that's a great story. He's not going to lessen his approach to the game just for just out of niceness. He'll play to the end, and he's had an Indian summer now in the way he's approached the latter games of this season. He's been a revelation really since the restart, and he just keeps on reinventing himself, whether it's being his haircuts, whether it's be the manager he's playing for, the way he plays. He's just been great, fantastic.
John, can we say that he's City's best ever, given how eras change and how the game changes between eras? And obviously you can't really compare him to the likes of Colin Bell, but he's been a phenomenal player for City.
Yeah. For me, I would say he is the greatest player, but it's very, very tough competition, difficult competition when you think Yaya was amazing and had some magical moments that perhaps David's not had. David Silva's just been consistently, week in, week out, probably the best player on the pitch, or one of the best players on the pitch. Yaya had those moments in big games, which were incredible. Sometimes Aguero's slightly forgotten how brilliant he is. So if you choose any of those three, I think you're not going to go far wrong, but I would personally go for David Silva, just because I don't think we've seen a player like that be that successful in England. In terms of he's a small player and skillful and can pass the ball and things like that, and that's not wasn't as a way to be successful in England before then. There's been a few players, I suppose, that have been okay, but I remember when he first signed, I was away for the first couple of games of the season, and obviously there was a couple of players who signed. Balotelli was another one, and I asked someone about Silva, and they were like, "I'm not sure about him, you know, he's very small, and I'm not sure he's going to be a success in England." And he had that game against Blackpool which turned everything around. I mean, it was only sort of a month into his career or whatever, but he's a fighter. He gives everything. And he just a pleasure to have watched him for a decade.
I was going to say, Adam, when it, like, the thing that, that was always levelled him at the start was that he would get knocked around. And then when you watch him, actually, you know, he's quite a little kicker, isn't he? He can leave his foot in.
He gives as good as he gets. I don't think I've ever seen him bullied in a game. I remember a game against Everton early on where David Moyes sent four different players to get a yellow card on him for kicking him off the pitch. And you'd never know that he was the targeted man. He just carried on playing, never really gets involved on the front of things. I've heard he likes to leave a foot in now and again, and that's part of the game management side that he's got.
we'll turn a blind eye to that bit.
Yeah, exactly. He's ours, so we like him. I've never seen him get bullied off the pitch. Yeah. And he never goes shirking for a small guy either.
No, he doesn't. He does do the hard work. I mean, how, as a fan of who's been watching him all this time, Adam, how do you feel to know that City got the best years of his career?
Yeah, it's rare that we do that. We're usually signing players at the twilight of the career, so we're to have got him at such a peak and then seeing him through. It's a privilege to have watched his greatest years. You've got a World Cup winner there. He's won everything apart from the Champions League, and you know, to know that he's done that in a blue shirt and so reliably, it's a privilege. And you know, I'm just gutted that it's coming to an end.
John, you mentioned the Blackpool goal. I'd completely forgotten about that when I was trying to think of his highlights. My two gut instincts were the goal that he scored at Hull in the 2-0 win when Company was sent off in the first half, and the assist that he put through for Dzeko for the final goal in the 6-1.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of other sort of landmark performances I can remember. Was QPR away? I just remember him being just dragging City all around on the day, just leading from the front.
There's that wonderful photograph where he's celebrating his goal in front of the floodlight.
Yeah. But one of the memories I have of him was actually a defeat. It was the defeat to Barcelona the first time City played them. And a lot of players looked scared that day. And Silva was just like, give me the ball. He was brilliant that day, but it was a poor team performance. But he just stood out and just like, just give me the ball. We need to play the way we normally play. Give it to me and I'll try and make things happen. That's the sort of courage that he's had throughout his time with Spain, but obviously more pertinently with City.
Yeah, Adam. His time at City's not been especially easy in spells. There was that spell in 2017-18, the Centurion season, where we all remember how good he was. It was the season he'd shaved his head, and he stood out like a sore thumb in the middle of the pitch. But we didn't know at the time of the trouble that he was going through in his personal life with his son back in Spain. And the fact that he was flying home every couple of days and then spending what time he could with his son and then coming back and just turning it on, it's phenomenal to think of the levels he achieved that season with that in mind.
Yeah, what a professional player he was. We didn't know. You're never getting any tabloid news about him falling out of nightclubs. He never gave us any reason to worry off the pitch. You think how alienated he must have felt with his family being not only in a foreign country to him, but being ill in a foreign country as well. The worry that any parent would go through with that kind of situation you're facing, to be able to turn up to work in a different country, to do it to the level that he did, and then almost switch off and go back to being family man, and then 2 days later doing the whole thing again, stepping on the pitch, being one of the best players on that pitch. How lucky are we that we had someone who was such a professional? I think the club handled it well. I think Pep really gave him leniency with it, and he repaid us tenfold.
Yeah, there's no doubt why he's now captain, is there, John, as well? Because the squad really do look up to him as a leader on the pitch. Not necessarily a vocal leader, but a leader nonetheless.
No, he's one of those. He's one of those people who leads by example. Like Adam said, you know, he'll never shirk a challenge. Get stuck in, brave with the ball, and it's been very useful to, very helpful to a lot of young players. I mean, Phil Foden speaks very fondly of all the advice he's been given from him. And there's been players in the past. Eric Garcia is another one. Brahim Diaz. He's helped people settle in. There's just so many superlatives for him.
Yeah, can we finish about his hair? Because I don't think there's a finer sight in football than when David Silva is jogging and that hair bounces like it does.
I'm not sure I could get away with a haircut like that, but he's just, that's just the magic of David Silva, isn't it?
Just absolutely distraught when he shaved it off, Adam, I was. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I like he had a little bit of a time-wasting tactic. When he knew his name was coming up off on the board and we were winning 1-0 against Chelsea, he walked over to the touchline near the East Stand just to ruffle his... he liked to ruffle his fingers through his hair as if that was a adequate time-wasting technique. So I'll always thank him for that gamemanship, like I say.
Well, we wait and see what happens with David Silva. Obviously, there's the potential of him being involved with City in the Champions League at the end of this season, and there will be some sort of send off after that as well. Let's look ahead now to the game with Norwich, because this game means absolutely nothing. So, John, could that make it fun?
Yeah, it could. It could. It's a while since City haven't had much riding on the end of the season game. Even Pellegrini's last season, I think there was something. They were still fighting for that fourth place, weren't they? So, it could be interesting. There are a few things to look out for. Like we've said, De Bruyne's assist record, David Silva's final game. I think there's a couple of players who are fighting to be part of the team in consideration for that game against Real Madrid. Most notably, perhaps, João Cancelo after his performance against Watford. That was perhaps a breakthrough performance, maybe too late. But, it was good to see what he's capable of after an indifferent season where he's not really taking his opportunity to show what he can do.
Yeah, Adam, are you looking to send them off with a bit of a battering after that 3-2 defeat at Carrow Road earlier in the season?
Yeah, I'm still not over that. I think they lost about 10 games after they played as world beaters against us. So I'm one to hold a grudge, you know me. and I'm hoping it's a repeat of those high scores that we saw under Mancini against them. I just think it's when we play with freedom, when we play with nothing on it, we're at our best. Pep's not going to need to think much about it. I can't imagine Norwich even wanting to turn up for the game. They've been relegated we've known them to be relegated for a while now. And it's just a bizarre game. No fans there, nothing to play for, just records, really. And they'll be famous last words, but I think we will pummel them, yeah.
Well,
that'll be nice after that one.
Well, I was going to say, John, I text you both before the show to get your score predictions. We're going to come on to that a bit later on, so keep it a secret what you've picked. But what was the phrase you used? I think we're going to smash them?
Well, Norwich have been absolutely terrible since the return, since lockdown. Like I say, they've got these records to go for. I think City need three, is it, to get past 100 goals again. So they'll come out thinking goals, going for goals. So yeah, Norwich are terrible. City want goals. I think Pep also, he's been talking about he wants to see them playing like the... I'm trying to think of the phrase that he said.
He always says smell. I want to smell them. Yeah. I want to get that feeling from them.
Yeah, which suggests to me, like, don't get a couple of goals and ease off. Just keep going and going and working on your game, pulling them apart, which I think is quite scary for Norwich.
Well, even last time it was a dead rubber at the Etihad, this one, Adam, it finished 3-2 to Norwich.
Yeah, it was at the Jack Rodwell.
It was, he scored two goals, Brian Kidd in charge, those were the days. Yeah.
Did they have something riding on that game? Can you remember? Or,
I think they were safe in mid-table by that stage.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's obviously bizarre I just remember Jack Rodwell's two goals, really, and then we kind of capitulated. So I hope that doesn't happen this weekend.
Well, I double checked this with you as well before the game, because Edison's in line for the Golden Glove as well.
Yes, and that'd be a nice end to the season, because bizarrely, City's defence has been what's caused them the issue, we believe, has caused them the issues this year, where we've not achieved the heights of previous seasons, yet we're in line for a golden boot? Does that just mean everyone's defence is rubbish this year?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. He's on joint 15 with Pope at Burnley at the moment. And so obviously if he keeps a clean sheet, he's guaranteed to get the golden gloves. He just might have to share them with somebody else. You have a glove each year. John, let's just before we get on to the predictions for this game, can you sum up this season, this Premier League season for City as it comes to a close? How do you look back on it?
Wow, that's a big question, isn't it? For some people, perhaps a season too far. I mean, it's just they've just been incredible for two seasons, and it was just perhaps a bit unrealistic to think it could go for a third season. And I mean, at the start of the season, I did think they were going to win the league again because I thought Liverpool wouldn't be able to match what they'd done the year before and been pipped by a point. I thought the points tally that needed would be a lot less. But Liverpool just started in such incredible form. City drops a few points here and there. You know, City, like we said, Norwich away wouldn't have happened the two seasons before. Losing at Liverpool, it was almost over before it began. It was like City's Centurion season in that they started the season so well that it was just done and dusted. And then it's just had a bit of a hangover feel about the second half of the season. So I think they'll be fresh and ready to go again next season, and just chalk this one down off to just didn't happen.
Yeah, Adam, it's a strange sort of feeling to be disappointed with a season where you finish second comfortably in the Champions League for next season. You've won a trophy, and you know your points total is more than the points total that you would get in most of your other Premier League seasons.
Yeah, I mean, we started it with a Charity Shield win as well. We've scored 141 goals this year. We've won 40 matches. It's a crazy time when you're gutted with that as an outcome. Bizarrely, I think this season will only be quantified by how we're doing the Champions League now. I think to look at the fixtures we had at the beginning of the season, it was almost over when we drew 2-2 with Tottenham in our first home game. That's how relentless Liverpool were in those early stages. So now that's forced everything to go on these two cup runs. We've fallen at the first hurdle in the Arsenal game, as we've much documented, much talked about. And I think now we'll only be able to quantify this season with the outcome of that Real Madrid game.
Well, we'll be coming on to that a bit later on because we are going to do some special Champions League podcasts for as long as City are in the tournament. So we'll talk about that one in good time. But for now, for the final time in the Premier League this season, we're going to try and raise some money for the Christie in our charity bet. William Hill is giving each of us a £10 correct score single, with the winnings going to the Cancer Treatment Hospital in South Manchester. We're on £870 for the season so far to this point. So it'd be nice to add some money to the pot. I'm going to start on this one because I think City are going to come out of the traps like John suggested. I've gone for 5-0, and that's 9-1 and £90. Adam, what's your score prediction for this one?
I've gone for 4-1, just because I think it'd be typical City to not let Edison get his golden glove award last day of the season against a team that have got nothing to play for. 4-1.
It would be perfect to sum up this season as well, wouldn't it? So that's that's 12-1 and £120. John, what's this smashing that City are going to do then?
Yeah, like I said, I just think they're going to absolutely tear them apart, and it's impossible to predict this one, isn't it? It could be 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, 7-0, 8-0, 9-0. So I've gone for 7.
7-0. So Norwich, yeah. The first team. I think that would make Norwich the first team to concede 7 at the Etihad twice. So that would be 28-1 if you're right about that. So that's £280, and would take us past the £1,000 for the season. So that would be grand if you could pull that one off. Have a word with Pep with you on Friday.
Okay.
Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and please gamble responsibly. For more information on responsible gambling, have a look at begambleaware.org. Now, if City fans thought the Centurion season was good, then they were about to be treated to something very special indeed. But it didn't come without its stresses, as it came down to the finest of fine margins. Rob Wilson is back for the final time this year to take us through the 2018-19 campaign.
I used to think that I should be good at question at the start of the 2018-19 season was simple. Could City live up to expectations after their Centurions' success? Leicester's Riyad Mahrez was the only summer signing, and Pep Guardiola's team began with a 2-0 win over Chelsea in the Community Shield. Sergio Aguero's brace saw him reach a landmark 200 goals for the club.
Little touch there for Sergio Aguero! And there is goal number 200 for Manchester City.
City then went 15 league games unbeaten, registering 13 wins in the process. In early October, they faced Liverpool at Anfield. The game finished 0-0, and Mahrez missed a crucial penalty late in the game that could have earned City all 3 points, at a ground where they'd not won since 2003. But journalist Jack Gorn saw some positives.
It was that controlled, and they were quite happy to sit in and wait for the chance, and they got a massive chance, and they fluffed it. I mean, penalty goes in and that's an absolute flawless performance.
City's impressive start to the season then took a hit. 3 defeats in 4 over Christmas saw them fall well behind Liverpool in the title race. In the new year, City was 7 points behind the league leaders but had the chance to close the gap as Jurgen Klopp's side visited the Etihad. With a tight game level at 1-1 heading into the latter stages, Leroy Sané fired home in off the post. Journalist Sam Lee thought it was an important win.
Had it gone the other way, it wouldn't have been over because City have won titles from more irretrievable positions, but 10 points and the momentum, it would have been completely different. But that is completely irrelevant now, and Liverpool have now got to go and look at themselves and maybe, you know, ask a few questions of themselves for the first time this season.
But the season was far from over. A 2-1 defeat at Newcastle saw City fall behind again, and the podcast panel had trouble working out what had gone wrong at St James's Park.
I don't think Newcastle were particularly good. Like, obviously, they set up well, stopped us from playing.
I thought, to be fair to them, I thought they deserved the points. I came away from that game thinking City actually deserved nothing out of that game.
They're near our net twice, so.
But
it went in twice.
But what threat did City carry? That's I suppose is the point.
Remarkably, that proved to be City's last league defeat of the season. They dispatched Arsenal and Everton before they comprehensively dismantled Chelsea 6-0. Sergio Aguero scored his 11th Premier League hat-trick too, levelling Alan Shearer's record. And 2 weeks later, City and Chelsea squared off again, this time in the League Cup final. After City had recorded a 10-0 aggregate victory over Burton in the semi-final, the final was incredibly tense. It went all the way to penalties, and Raheem Sterling took the winning kick.
Sterling scores! And Manchester City win the first silverware of the season! The first leg of the quadruple that they are going for!
But just as City got one trophy in the bag, the quadruple dream was dashed. City were knocked out of the Champions League by Tottenham Hotspur, and in the cruelest way. Sterling thought he'd scored a stoppage time winner to take City through, only for it to be ruled out by VAR for offside. The panel tried to cheer themselves up.
One thing that did cheer me up, my nephew came to his first City game yesterday, which is a particular result for the family because his dad is a massive home and away Match Going United fan. And by the end of the game, once he was getting in the car with my sister and we were saying goodbye to him, my mum said, you know, we hope you enjoyed your first game and don't worry that they lost. And he just looked at us and went, well, we didn't lose. You know what? I like that attitude.
God loving.
Yeah, I like that. And he's quite right. We didn't lose.
Well, at least someone went home, our people. Because I punched a coffee table, and I'm not a violent man.
A glass one or wood?
No, it's wooden.
All right, okay.
In the league, City pressed on. A tense Manchester derby at Old Trafford swung their way, with Bernardo Silva and Leroy Sané both scoring in a 2-0 win. And with City and Liverpool evenly matched, it came down to the very last week of the season. And it was Leicester who were proving a tough nut to crack. And City looked out of ideas, until this happened.
Company. Had a look, had a hit!
Vincent Kompany's 30-yard goal of the season left him in tears and meant that City needed 3 points on the final day against Brighton to retain the title. And that's exactly what they did. They fell behind early on, but goals from Aguero and Aymeric Laporte had City in front by half-time. Mahrez and Ilkay Gundogan then finished the job in the second half, as City won 4-1.
They haven't had De Bruyne all season. They've had Fernandinho out for the running. Yeah. They've missed key players, and still they've been relentless. And that, for me, it just shows the scale of how good this City team is.
this is Pep's credit, and you know, credit to the players as well, but Pep and his coaching team, you've seen it again this year, that this success has not just been built on how good the team are, this success has been built on the improvement of individual players.
But that still wasn't the end of the honours for the season. City faced Watford in the FA Cup final, and not only did they win, but the 6-0 scoreline equaled the record for the largest ever victory in that fixture. Richard Burns looked back over the previous two seasons.
The season with 100 points, as if that wasn't enough, he's backed it up by being the first manager to manage a team to back-to-back titles in the Premier League in a decade. He's done it not just 100 points one season, but with 98 points the next, and backed it up with a domestic treble. He's been absolutely phenomenal. He's coached good players to being great players, and great players to... just a whole new levels. You can see it with every individual, almost every individual that he's worked with.
The day after securing the historic domestic treble, Captain Vincent Kompany then announced that he would be leaving. In his time at the Etihad, he won 4 Premier League titles, 2 FA Cups, 4 League Cups and 2 Community Shields. It made him one of City's most decorated players. It brought to an end a spectacular decade for City, who were the most dominant team in England throughout the 2010s. And back in August 2009, there can't have been many who expected the next 10 years to be as good as they were.
My name's Ricky the Hitman Hatton, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Get involved with the debate on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
A look there at the final season in City's last decade. Now, for the final time this season, we're going to turn to Ask the Panel, which is your opportunity to quiz the panel here. We're going to start with Harry Scanlon on Twitter, who asks, what do you think of Guardiola's comments about João Cancelo? John, you talked about him a bit before. Let's have a listen to what Pep Guardiola had to say.
The most incredible thing from João is now he's another man, different, completely different man than he came when he arrived. We need time to understand each other, him to me and the team. Me to him too. And what I want is his behavior that he's doing in the last, after restart. Unfortunately for us, but when we came back to our starter training session, he was the best player that was training session and was incredible. And unfortunately, have a little problem in the dangerous part of his leg. And he should be stopped for a while. But only what I want to draw is this, his happiness in the training session, his relation with the mates, and he's enjoying, because we know the quality they have. He's in special, he's fast with the ball, he's incredible talent player. And with this happiness he's showing in the training session, is going to help us a lot the next season. He understands us better than the beginning, and we understand him better than the beginning. Sometimes you need time. And it was, and now he's a happy man.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, facebook.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
I think that's interesting, John, because it's that angle of you need time to bed into a Guardiola team, but it's just that phrase, he's a happy man.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear him say that. I mean, he wouldn't be the first player to need time to settle under Pep. You know, we've seen Bernardo Silva didn't have a great first season and then a brilliant second. Mahrez took a little time. There's been others. When Cancelo's first signed, I spoke to a couple of people about him, and they were saying he's just the ideal Pep player. He's got everything about him, and it just hasn't happened. I think were he left-footed, he may have played more games, because left-back's more of a problem position than right-back. But Kyle Walker's had a good season. He looks, you know, he's been consistent all year, consistently City's best full-back. So, you know, when you're struggling with fullbacks, you're going to stick with Kyle Walker. And if Cancelo didn't feel settled or at home, it's not going to help him playing on the wrong side of defence. So that's part of the reason. But if he's come back from lockdown happy, feeling comfortable, it's an exciting thing for next season. Maybe even this season for the Champions League. But it's good to see, because he was highly rated when he came, and we've not really seen enough of it.
Well, John mentioned that, earlier on in the show, Adam, that Cancelo was played well at Watford in the left-back role. Paul Percival on Twitter asks, can João Cancelo be City's long-term left-back when Mendy isn't fit or available?
I'm not sure about him being long-term left-back, the answer to left-back, because Pep does like his balance. But a few points on Cancelo. I didn't realise how much he came in for money-wise. I think it was around 58 to 60 million. So has he come in and expected to be the first choice right back because the club are paying that money for him? And it's weird to hear Pep speak so candidly about someone who wasn't mustn't have been happy at the beginning, and now he is. So Pep's obviously convinced that those days are behind them for him to be able to speak like that. But I watched Cancelo against Southampton. We got beat, but he was the best player on the pitch. And since then, I've wanted to see more of him in the team. And I was more than happy with him at left back. I think he may play left back against Madrid because is Mendy suspended for that one?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he's the answer for the temporary left back issue. I don't think he's the answer forever at left back, but he's certainly more than adequate to fit in a Pep side. When he first signed Neville, Gary Neville was waxing lyrical about him from his days at Valencia seeing him, and he said, "We've signed a real top player." And we've not seen that this year, but there are starting to show signs, and he's had a few column inches this week, Cancelo, after his Watford performance. And I think certainly he's got a point to prove in this last game in hopefully try and cement that left-back place, but I don't think it's forever.
Finally, Simon K on the emails asks, when City don't score early, the games have become a huge slog in ways that they didn't in Pep's last two seasons and even in his first season as well. How does City stop that from happening next season? Adam, I'm going to throw this one to you. It's not an easy question to finish on.
Yeah, I'm as perplexed as anyone, really. I've noticed it this year that when we go behind, we don't seem to have the answers alluded to earlier that we have had over previous seasons. Previous seasons, you've had a bit of confidence to say, we're going to turn this around, we're going to keep going till the end. Sterling's going to pick something out from nowhere. Silva might unlock something. De Bruyne can. Foden's now capable of it. But this season, we just seem beaten as soon as that first one goes in. I'm thinking back to Newcastle. We equalised and then took the lead and then conceded again. There's been times when even if we do get ourselves back into it, it's only for a certain period of the game and we're going to slip behind again. That's completely out of keeping with what's happened under Pep in previous games. Pep's a genius. We expect him to have all the answers. And the question's correct. We've not looked like getting ourselves out of that hole once we've been in it. I think the Madrid game is a recent time when we've come from behind and actually won that game. But we've not looked like doing it, and I don't actually know why that is.
Well, John, let me give you some numbers on this one, because when City have conceded the first goal in a game this season, their record is 1-6, drawn 1, lost 10. They've never lost that many in any of Pep's previous seasons when they've conceded the first goals.
Yeah, it's very difficult to put your finger on why exactly they can't seem to get themselves out of it. They don't seem to even create score a goal. It's quite often a 1-0 or a second goal conceded, and just a general sort of lack of confidence. It's become a bit of a pattern, and you get like the fans, I'm sure the players think the same, that oh, we're going to go behind now, and this is a bad omen because we never seem to turn it round. And you go back to those streaks of wins they put together for two seasons, and nothing seems to bother them. They just dust themselves down and just win every game.
I think the longest winning run this season is about four games, isn't it, in the league?
Is it? Yeah, something like that. They just a couple of fresh faces. A new season, new start, a run of wins, and things can turn around pretty quickly. Pep knows how to win games better than anybody. He's got the best win percentage record of any manager in England. The same when he was in Spain, same when he was in Germany. He knows how to win games, and he will have a lot of ideas how to turn it around.
Well, that's a positive to finish on, I think, in that case, because that's it for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening to the show. If you've enjoyed it, then please head on over to wherever you get your podcasts and give it a rating and a review. We've also got a Patreon page where we do a bonus podcast throughout the season, and the final one for this year is all about the team of 2012, what it achieved and how hard it was to watch those players move on. There are more details on patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. This week's is the final one of the season because next week's podcast is Blue Moon Podcast Live ish. Tickets are on sale now, and the money from them is going to the Man City fans' food bank support. And this year, you don't even need to be in Manchester if you want to come to the show, because it's being done online through Zoom with our special guest Nedim Anua as well. So check out more details on our Twitter feed at Blue Moon Podcast. Thanks to my guest this week, Adam Carter.
Cheers.
And Goal.com's Jonathan Smith.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you next week for the live show. See you then.
Was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.